This is Rob Simbeck for the Vanderbilt Owen Graduate School of Management. I'm talking today with Professor of Management David Parsley, co-author of a recent study that sheds light on the bottom line benefits of corporate lobbying. Despite calls for restrictions from both sides of the aisle in the last election, lobbying remains both a prevalent and a highly effective part of the corporate approach. The percentage of firms involved in lobbying nearly doubled between 1998 and 2005, and spending by lobbyists doubled in the decade ending in 2007, approaching $3 billion. Professor Parsley looked at the effect of those expenditures on the corporate bottom line, and we're here to talk about some of what he learned. Professor Parsley, welcome.
Thank you.
Let's set the stage. What qualifies someone as a lobbyist, and what is the current scale of lobbying activity in the country?
Well, the definition that I took it from the Center for Responsive Politics website, is any communication made on behalf of a client to a member of Congress, congressional staffers, the president, White House staff, and high-level employees of nearly 200 agencies regarding the formulation, modification, or adoption of legislation. That's lobbying. And in terms of how extensive is it, actually it's a bit surprising. Only about 11% of firms lobby. Average about $500,000 a year. The max is General Electric with over $19 million.
How did you come to study lobbying, and how does the study that you've undertaken here differ from earlier work?
We noticed that most studies of corporate political activities had focused on political action committees, or PAC monies, and soft monies. Soft monies are no longer allowed, but somehow these were sexy and people studied them. And most of the studies were on whether money bought votes. But coming from a business school, we wanted to take a different perspective and see whether, you know, the spending had a bottom line impact. First off, one of the big how we differ is that contributions, the previous studies studying PACs and soft monies, those are actually contributions, and contributions are not made by corporations. In fact, they're outlawed. They're made by members, people on behalf of companies. You know, maybe company company employees. They may form a PAC, but it's not a company expense. And then the second thing was, we thought that the whole issue of deciding whether politicians vote depending on who gave them money was doomed to failure because of the nature of like omnibus legislation. If you know one bill has 37 different things attached to it, how do you decide whether the person voted for this or that? And then there's vote trading and all that sort of stuff. So votes were difficult to trace. So what we wanted to do was focus on a financial perspective. We thought that if firms spent money, they probably expect a return.
So how specifically did you line up what you studied? What was the methodology?
Well, we gathered the money. It turns out another aspect of why we got onto this was we found that the database actually existed of what companies spent, and that was made possible by a law. Congress made it a law that companies have to actually report this, and so this is available online. So we gathered this data, and then through a painstaking process, because it came from two different sources, matched it with other data on corporate reporting, their assets, their liabilities, and their returns.
And then where did it lead you? What did you find?
Well, we look at whether lobbying is positively related to measures of financial performance as reported in firms' financial statements. We look at three accounting measures of performance, and the answer there is yes. But we note that the causality could actually be the other way. So firms may spend more on lobbying when they're doing well, and it may not be that they lobby and then do well. So we try to model that reverse causality explicitly, and we still get the same positive association. But what I think is our most revealing attempt at this was we sort all the data on lobbying by firms into five portfolios based on lobbying intensity. So lobbying intensity is how much lobbying spending by a company relative to its size, maybe measured as its assets or its sales. And then we match the performance of those portfolios in each of the quintiles to other non-lobbying firms and also of a similar, in the same industry, the same size, the same book-to-market ratios. And then we compare the performance of those portfolios 3 years out. And what we find is only in the top quintile, the firms that lobby the most or lobby the most intensively outperform the market, and they pretty significantly outperform the market by about 8% over the 3 years following the portfolio formation. So we think that's fairly significant. So it turns out that just spending money, maybe contrary to popular belief, just spending money doesn't necessarily guarantee you success. There's only a group of firms that lobby that actually do really well.
And I think you point out that part of it depends on how many other firms in a given sector may be lobbying, that it probably helps to be out front on it.
That's a possibility. It also may be that some firms benefit. There may be some free riding going on. So one firm bears the cost and the other firms benefit. One example of that was, it's slightly related. It's in when Chavez nationalized the oil fields and the production facilities. Only I believe it was Exxon that took the case to court. Well, Exxon finally won the case, and then the other producers whose assets had also been seized. Well, they of course benefited from the ruling. So the relationship between sort of dollars spent and who benefits is not always straightforward.
Well, given that there are some real advantages and that it looks as though there are advantages, are you surprised that there isn't a bigger percentage of firms lobbying?
I guess I am a little bit, but I think it's in part because we don't really understand all of the effects. We don't understand the mechanism, the way that lobbying works. From the political science literature, what has been emphasized is that it's a long-term relationship, and so a given firm may not want to set up hire a lobbying firm or set up an in-house lobbying because they know that this is going to be an ongoing commitment. And so it may just be a series of, well, maybe I'll do it next year, maybe I'll do it next year, maybe I'll do it next year. That could be one issue. Another one is, like I said, the free riding. This other firm in our industry is already spending a lot of money on lobbying, and we benefit from this. And so we're not spending. There may also be some threats going on, which are very difficult to measure. So it may be that I'm afraid to lobby because if I were to hire a lobbying firm, the other firm would then double its lobbying budget. And of course, I can't match that. And so maybe I'm just willing to go with the status quo as it is.
How much does scrutiny affect lobbying? And do you see this and other looks at lobbying as affecting them in the future?
Well, I think the scrutiny is a really good thing. The transparency of the U.S. is one of the advantages of the U.S. market. We've seen it. Everybody in the world is trying to emulate the system. Maybe less so now with the recent financial turmoils and some of the problems in the subprime markets and all that sort of thing. But just in terms of transparency, the U.S. market is known to be transparent, and this is the case with lobbying too. We're making this information public, and I think the better reporting that there is may help alleviate some of the alarmist fears. You know, transparency is better than secrecy also.
Thank you, Professor Parsley. David Parsley is professor of finance at the Vanderbilt Owen Graduate School of Management. For Owen, this is Rob Simbeck.